Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as a minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Sophie Smith, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, our music director, Hal Walker, all of these wonderful musicians, the Fallow Time Folk Orchestra, and the Golden Tones Junior Choir. And the Kent Unitarian Universalist Tone Chimers, too. If you miss them on Music Sunday, you're in for a real treat. This is the day that we have been given. We light our chalice in gratitude for all of the blessings in this day.
A peace speech adapted from Nelson Mandela. Peace and nonviolence have not yet become the automatic or predominant modes for living with difference and diversity, in spite of all the progress humankind has seen and achieved in the last century. Too much of our planet is still embroiled in destructive conflict, strife, and war. Peace is not just the absence of conflict. Peace is the creation of an environment where all can flourish, regardless of race, color, creed, religion, gender, class, caste, or any other social markers of difference. Religion, ethnicity, language, social and cultural practices are elements which enrich human civilization, adding to the wealth of our diversity. Why should they be allowed to become a cause of division and violence? We demean our common humanity by allowing this to happen. Human beings will always be able to find arguments for confrontation and no compromise. We humans are, however, the beings capable of reason, compassion, and change. May this be the century of compassion, peace, and nonviolence. I thank you, Nelson Mandela.
That each and every one of you can relate to the scenario that I'm about to share with you. You might have been a character in this scenario when you were a child, or maybe even just last week, or perhaps as recently as this very morning. So here's the scene. There are two children seated on the floor playing. Let's say they are an older sister and a younger brother. They are surrounded by toys. It is the very picture of sibling harmony. They are peacefully playing side by side for a while until the sister grabs a toy from her brother's hands. And I bet you know what happens next. The offended child cries and calls out to his parent. Father hurriedly arrives in the room, obviously torn away from some important task, and intervenes in the situation by saying something like this to his daughter. Give that back to your brother right now and say you're sorry. And the daughter says, I'm sorry. To which the father responds, that wasn't a real apology. Now say it like you mean it. And so she sighs and says, I'm sorry. And peace and harmony is restored. Or so it might seem for a while, but a forced apology for the sake of establishing harmony rarely accomplishes that goal. But here is what might actually happen when there's a forced apology. Children learn that it is okay to lie about their feelings. They are left feeling angry and frustrated without a way to heal their relationship. And the inherent ability that children possess to have positive interactions with others is wasted. They lose the opportunity to hear and to be heard, to each express their side of the story. And the process of true conflict resolution is devalued. And the chance to practice real conflict resolution is missed. So my advice to you this morning, it's not just for children and families, but for anyone who finds themselves in a situation where an apology is in order. We must take the time to create and hold a safe and respectful place for all to be heard so as to facilitate hearing and to strengthen relationships. We need to stop and talk about it. Making the time for resolving conflict is not a quick and easy fix, and it might seem more difficult and cumbersome than using the forced apology technique, but most often, the simple power of feeling heard and having our hurt acknowledged emerges during such conversations, and often a heartfelt apology materializes. An apology can serve to reconnect and reestablish harmony, but it must be stated with empathy, with sincerity, and with understanding.
To help us prepare for a time of silence and meditation and prayer, wisdom words from the Dalai Lama. The human capacity to care for others isn't something trivial or something to be taken for granted. Rather, it's something we should cherish. Compassion is a marvel of human nature, a precious inner resource, and the foundation of our well-being and the harmony of our societies. If we seek happiness for ourselves, we should practice compassion. And if we seek happiness for others, we should practice compassion. And I invite you to join with me now in a prayer that is a body prayer. It has movements to it. And so if you are so moved, you can join me in the motions to this prayer. May we open our hearts to this day. May we open our arms to one another. When we are open, it's easier to connect. Heart to heart, hand to hand. So many joys, so many sorrows. When we need strength, let us reach down deep within ourselves to listen for that still small voice, or maybe reach down and touch the earth, feel that harmony always flowing beneath our feet. Find the blessings there and gather them up. So many blessings when we feel them rising, filling us, we reach out in praise and gratitude for all of the ways that we have been touched, blessed. It all begins with opening our hearts. May it be so, and amen.
Shihab Nye is a contemporary Palestinian-American poet and novelist living in Texas. This is her poem, Shoulders. A man crosses the street in rain, stepping gently, looking two times north and south, because his son is asleep on his shoulder. No car must splash him. No car drive too near to his shadow. This man carries the world's most sensitive cargo, but he's not marked. Nowhere does his jacket say fragile, handle with care. His ear fills up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world if we're not willing to do what he's doing with one another. The road will only be wide. The rain will never stop falling.
If you aren't involved with one of our Chalice or Food for Thought groups, you may not be aware that those groups are focused around our monthly worship themes. Each month, the members of the group gather to engage in thoughtful conversation about their own experience with the themes that we explore in our monthly worship services. We provide them with the groups with readings and quotations and some questions to help guide and focus the conversation. I have been thinking about one of the questions posed to the groups this month about our theme of harmony. The question, is there ever a time when discord is more adaptive than harmony? I think my own answer to that question is yes, but I guess it really depends on what we mean by harmony. Last week, I offered a Taoist and Confucian interpretation of harmony. In Taoism, harmony is realized to the degree that a person is able to find and keep their balance, to align their own lives with the Tao or the Way. In Confucianism, there's a great emphasis placed on societal harmony, on peaceful coexistence and cooperation amongst us. In our own society, those meanings resonate with us, and we use harmony to refer to balance and to cooperation, but also to agreement and tranquility and a sense of congruence. All those sound like good and desirable ways of being. Of course we want to have balance in our lives. Of course we want to live cooperatively with others, to have agreement with our neighbors, to be peaceful and at ease, and with a sense that things within us and between us and around us make sense and are flowing as they should. Who doesn't want that? We all do, right? And that's exactly why I think sometimes discord can be more adaptive than harmony. We want harmony so much that sometimes I think we act like things are harmonious when they really aren't. For example, in the story Karen told earlier, when one child apologizes to another without sincerity or understanding because a parent has ordered it, it might seem on the surface like harmony has been restored. But it may well be that misunderstanding or hurt feelings are just shoved down, simmering. Sometimes it takes a while and a bit of discord to find our way through and back to true harmony. In the ethics class that we're having at church, we were talking this week about what happens when we have a moral disagreement with somebody who is important to us. Some folks in the group said that when the relationship is really important, they sometimes choose to gloss over the differences between themselves and the other person in order to keep the peace. This was summarized as the yes, dear tactic. I admit that I've used that tactic myself. I don't remember using it in moral disagreement with my spouse, but I know that I have used it when we are getting ready to leave on a trip. That is a chronic place of tension in our relationship. Evan and I are both afflicted by an inability to plan ahead when we're going out of town. And consequently, every time, it seems, we have too much to do with too little time left to do it before we have to go. And so it's happened more than once, frequently, in the midst of that stress, that Evan says, we need to leave at such and such a time. And the to-do list there on the table says, all these things must happen, most of which I have put there. Clean the house. Clean the house is really important to me before we leave. And for her, it's dispensable. That's not the most important thing. So here we have this long list, and here she's saying, we need to go at such and such time. And I know very well that I'm not going to be done with my list before such and such a time comes. But I also know we're going to have an argument if I say so. So I have said, essentially, yes, dear, in that potential moment of conflict. And then when the appointed hour arises, and she says, it's time to go, and I say, but I need to do one more thing. It doesn't feel like harmony. When I asked Evan if I could tell you this about us, she said, yes, but I have to tell also about how she's decided to start dealing with this dynamic by saying that we need to go well before even she thinks we need to go. In the hopes that maybe we'll be on time. We chose the title of this service several months ago. And as I considered it anew in the last couple of weeks, it has seemed a bit of a puzzle to me. What is the cost of harmony? The more I think about it, the more that I think that it does cost us something to prioritize harmony. First, I think it costs us a willingness to accept our differences, to accept diversity. I said last week that musically speaking, you can't have harmony unless you have multiplicity. Harmony requires difference. So if we're going to have true harmony, we have to be willing to embrace the differences. And embracing differences sometimes requires us to sacrifice a little bit. So back to my little leave-taking example. Evan and I have realized that we've had the same argument enough times that we're both bored of it. And so we decided to have a conversation about it when we weren't trying to get out of town. We realized that for me, getting those things done, especially cleaning the house, leaves me leaving with a sense of accomplishment and feeling at ease. And that's more important to me than running a little late. But for her, the running a little late leaves her feeling frazzled and so stressed out that it's anxiety-producing and puts a pallor over the experience of going. So I came to understand that if we are going to have a little more harmony in our relationship, we're going to have to understand those differences and figure out a way to compromise a little bit. I came to that understanding through dialogue about our differences. So that's one tool. Or for another example, when much more is at stake, consider the situations unfolding right now in Nigeria and Uganda in response to the new anti-gay laws passed in those nations. You may have seen in the news that people suspected of being gay in Uganda are literally being like rounded up and marched through the streets as a method of public shaming before being taken to be tried for the crime. In Nigeria, people suspected of being gay are being tried and then sentenced not only to jail but also to physical punishment. Chimamanda Adichie is a prominent Nigerian author who has written recently a truly beautiful article explaining why she believes that this new law is dangerous and destructive. She's opening dialogue, not with an individual, but with a whole nation, in fact, with a whole world, as the article has made its way on the internet. For supporters of the law, she writes, there seems to be something about homosexuality that sets it apart, a sense that it's not normal. If we're part of a majority group, we tend to think that others in the minority group are abnormal. Not because they've done anything wrong, but because we have defined normal to be what we are. And since they're not like us, then they are abnormal. Supporters of the law want a certain sense of human homogeneity. But we cannot legislate into existence, she says, a world that does not exist. The truth of our human condition is that we are diverse, multifaceted people. The measure of our humanity lies in part and how we think of those who are different from us. We cannot and should not have empathy only for people who are like us. So to realize true harmony, we have to be willing to sacrifice a little of our own comfort in order to accept people who are very different from us, maybe especially when we don't fully understand those differences. And this church is a wonderful place to practice. Though we share in common the choice of Unitarian Universalism, there are genuine differences between us. We have real theological differences. So that covenant that we're using this month, I know that there are some of you who are uncomfortable with that thus do we covenant with each other and with God part at the end. I know that that's true. And I also know that there are some of you who are so glad, so grateful that we're saying those words, because though we sing about God here, rarely do I invite you to speak of God. So there are differences. Some of us are theists, and talk of God, relationship with God is important. And some of you are humanists or atheists or agnostics, and that's not so important for you. There are real differences between us. Some of us pray, some of us don't. Some of us love ritual, some of us don't understand it. And so we have to have multiplicity here. We have to have diversity. That is part of how we make this church home for everybody. And it's not just theological differences. There are political differences too. You're well aware that many, many folks in this congregation are deeply concerned about fracking and are working hard with religious coalitions and political organizations and environmental groups against fracking and grounding that in a sense of this faith community. And there are people, and I have spoken with them, who have asked me if it's okay to be pro-fracking in this congregation, to have the feeling that if it's done responsibly, and believing that it can be done responsibly, that it can be an engine of economic growth, which also serves the common good. There are real differences between us, political, theological, maybe social. There are all kinds of differences. We don't all think the same. And that's one reason why this church is such a good place to practice embracing difference. And there's another reason. We are a religious community. And as a religious community, we have deep regard for compassion. To achieve real harmony, we have to be able to cultivate our capacity for compassion. We sang earlier in the service about opening our hearts. Opening our hearts to people who are different from us might make us uncomfortable sometimes. But the good news is that compassion is one of the spiritual tools in our toolbox that we can use to help us get beyond our discomfort and bridge the gap between our differences. Compassion might open the way to understanding, but even if it doesn't help us to understand, compassion can help us to accept one another as valued human beings with dignity and worth, even if we don't understand each other and even if we disagree. I love that image from Naomi Shihab Nye's poem of the father holding the child waiting to cross the street as the cars stream by, and he looks back and forth twice, cautious not only of the traffic but also of the cars that might splash the puddles onto him and his child. He holds the child so tenderly, so precious, doing everything he can to protect them. And the poet says, "We're not going to be able to live well in this world if we're not willing to do what he's doing with one another." Imagine what might happen if we were to take such care with each other. The Dalai Lama offered a teaching about harmony at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine several years ago. In his presentation, he talked about the reality of our interdependence. "I am in you," he said, "and you are in me." As Unitarian Universalists, we embrace that understanding. That makes perfect sense to us. We talk often about the interdependent web of all existence in which we're all bound up. I am in you, and you are in me. And because this is true, the Dalai Lama says, taking care of each other is really taking care of ourselves. When I take care of you, you take care of me. Taking care of ourselves is taking care of each other. So let us practice compassion for ourselves, and let us practice compassion for each other. Because we are different, and because we are the same. Harmony in diversity. Let it be our practice, let it be our prayer. Amen, and blessed be. There is more love somewhere, and compassion is one of the spiritual tools that will help us find it. Take your compassion out into the world and be an agent of harmony. Go in peace.